This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Drama.
Fashion.
Podcast. And who are we?
That's one secret we'll never tell.
XOXO
Girls Room.
Hey up, East Siders. Girls Room here. The one and only podcast about the scandalous lives of Manhattan's elite. I'm Julia Gray. I have my frenemy slash co-host here, Drew Haskins.
You know you love me.
And joining us again today is music journalist, union organizer, and all-around hilarious genius. Welcome, Brenda Jagada.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I need to call out, before we get into it, I need to call out, Drew wrote in the doc, in all caps, do not say, hey, 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 because he was defaulting to a Fat Albert kind of intro for the last, I want to say, 3 episodes.
Yeah, and that's obviously not something I really want to keep doing. I chose something else for today. I think really subconsciously, it's a RuPaul thing, because he always walks into the workroom saying hello, hello, hello.
But I like hello, hello.
Yeah, I like that too. But I also, that is RuPaul's thing. That's not Drew Haskins' thing. So today I just stole Gossip Girl's thing, but I'm a work in progress, like many of us are.
You'll find your own identity soon enough.
I'll find my voice. 75 episodes into this podcast, I will find it.
Oh, Brent, I'm so happy you're here. Sorry, please go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how many episodes are there of this show?
Of Gossip Girl or Girls Room proper?
Of Gossip Girl. Like, how many
episodes? There is an ungodly amount of episodes.
I think the number,
but I was looking and I said, wow, we're going to be doing this show until we're 57 years old.
Oh my goodness. They're actually a shocking number. Because you have to remember, this is from the time where network TV was ordering like 22 episode seasons, like back in the good old days before streaming. This show is 121 episodes.
No.
That is double Girls.
That is double Girls.
Yep.
And they're longer. They're double the length.
And even worse, also. Oh my God, that's crazy. You know, no wonder they ran out of steam and just started like throwing shit at the wall. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with a lot of these soap opera adjacent shows like Gossip Girl and Scandal, is that they truly just burn out at a certain point. You can't top the craziness over and over and over again in a way that actually is good. Like, you think of, you know, Georgina Sparks' Law, like 3 or 4 times into Georgina's appearances, they get crazier and stupider.
Did you say Georgina's Law?
Yeah, Georgina's
Law. Georgina's Law.
Yeah, I mean, Serena can't kill someone every season.
No.
Right. I mean, she could. That would make for a good show, but it'd be a different show.
And everyone's like, Serena, we begged you not to do it. We just one thing you have to not do. Please.
Can't kill someone. This will come up every episode without fail. Rinda, I want to hear about your relationship with Gossip Girl.
Oh my God. Well, I've watched it, the whole thing, through twice. And so when I watched this episode in preparation for being on the podcast, it was my third time watching it. Actually, it might have even been more. Like, the first time when I was watching it, when I was whatever, like, I don't know, what was it, 8th grade or something, like maybe even earlier, I was watching episodes multiple times, like a week. I was obsessed. So yeah, I love Gossip Girl. It was, I think we'll get into the fashion stuff later, but it was very formative for me in terms of fashion. And I still think about it all the time, because I think like many of the looks aged well. Like, we're all wearing red tights again, like a la Blair Waldorf, you know. Many of those gowns I would happily wear. If someone, you know, were to give me an Oscar de la Renta dress, I would wear any of those outfits. Even the headbands, like any of the flats, I feel like are kind of back. Anyway, but I would like, yeah, I would really try to approximate as close as I could to those outfits. I would like go when I was in India, I would like get outfits, like pretty affordable to get outfits like tailored. So I would get like kind of lookalike outfits tailored in India and wear those. So yeah.
Wow, that's way cooler than like, I don't know, going to Bloomingdale's and just like looking at the clothes with their friends and
they were definitely knockoffs. Like they were, you know, and it wasn't the Oscar de la Renta kind of stuff. It was like I distinctly remember me and my best friend got copies of the remember the episode where they play like Beautiful Girls and they wear those
yeah
we got those dresses. I still have one. I actually like every whatever like 5 to 10 years I remake that dress just like in a different size. So I have one now in green stuff.
You need to send us a photo of you in that dress.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Send
it to our TikTok. It'll be clipped right here.
Julia, I think we need to somehow do a photo shoot where we are in those dresses too.
Oh my god.
We have to. I saw a tweet over the weekend that like gay guys will start a podcast and just to make Canva photos of themselves every episode. Like we need to do that.
That's such a good idea. Brenda, could we pay you to make us 2 dresses?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely in the realm.
All right. We'll talk offline about that.
Oh my God. I'm dying to put on a Serena wig too. The biggest like triangle of blonde hair I can find.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this is a great lead into our next question. Brenda, which Gossip Girl are you?
Ooh, which Gossip Girl am I? I feel like I have this kind of like propensity to just identify with whoever I think is like the worst character. Like, just, I don't know, out of something of like feeling something for them, feeling like this kind of relief. The idea of like a character who's too perfect, I just like don't find relatable. Anyway, so that's my whatever, my preface. Like I've kind of recently started thinking like, am I a Jessa like in Girls? She's the worst. So all of that is to say, I kind of feel like Blair sometimes. I feel like I can be kind of bitchy and selfish, but also I think she is beneath that. There's a, you know, there's something really good there.
Totally. Brenda, a girl after my own heart. Girls with anxiety love Blair.
Oh, so true. So true. Maybe that's what it is.
I'm curious. Like, the more, as I talk to people on this show and ask that question, it becomes increasingly clear. Drew, I don't feel like you face anxiety in a Blair way.
False. I am nothing if not anxious. And this week was especially triggering as someone who historically sets hoops up for people to jump through.
But are you neurotic? Maybe that. I don't think you're neurotic.
I'm feeling more neurotic. And also, you have to remember, I am a Marnie. And to be a Marnie and to be a Serena are not necessarily incompatible, but like, a Marnie is a Serena and a Blair combined. So I think that's kind of where I'm sitting right now. But it took watching Girls first to land on this point.
Well, Drew, you may experience anxiety, but you don't present anxiety, if that makes sense.
That's the Blair.
And that is true. That's why you maybe are a Blair at the end of the day. Okay, well. There's a lot here.
I will keep up appearances until I am blue in the face.
Are both of you Blairs? What do you say?
I mean, I'm definitely a Blair.
I'm cuspy.
That's Serena Blair cusp?
Yeah.
You've been Serena up until this episode, or identifying as such.
I have been, because that's historically how I've identified, but like maybe it's just where I am in my life right now. Like I haven't watched this show, not even all the way through, just like the first 3 seasons since 2021, and 3 years is a long time to sit my I'm a different person at 28 than I was at 25.
Has anyone ever identified as Nate? I feel like I'm like, who is
Nate? Oh my god, a cardboard box maybe.
I am so curious. I want my straight friend Brad to come on at some point. And I know he's going to identify as one of the guys, and I am so curious what that's going to be. So, and everyone just shut it off. Like, we're not excited for that. Like, I'll not be tuning in, but it's...
Have we called Nate Flat Stanley before? Because of his one-dimensionalness?
That's exactly what we've called him, and that's exactly what he is.
I just want to make sure that I've shared that on our recording. Speaking of which, who is your Gossip Girl boyfriend?
Ooh, wait, okay, who are all the options? There's Dan, Nate, Rufus.
Oh my, for you to say Rufus, red flag. I mean, if you want to, like, veer,
Chuck, oh God.
Also Bart Bass, I mean.
Bart Bass, God. Bart and Chuck are scary. I mean, I guess it has to be fucking Dan, I guess, but I feel like, ugh, I don't want to be with Dan. It's just like, no, I don't want that.
Was there anyone as like a eighth grader watching it who you were like, ooh, that's my crush?
I definitely thought Nate was the hottest one. And maybe the fact that he's a cardboard box was like good for the whole crush thing. Like he was just hot and that was it. Good for projecting onto.
Absolutely. That's beautiful.
That is beautiful. That's,
that's what a crush is, you know?
I have a much... This is where I reveal I have a complicated relationship with Chase Crawford, just as a cultural figure. Cliche it is as it is, my gay awakening was Zac Efron in High School Musical.
Awesome.
And for a very long time, I thought that Chase Crawford was trying to be Zac Efron and that he... simply was never going to have what Zach has.
Whoa.
With the benefit of experience and, you know, life lived, I don't think that anymore. I like Chase Crawford is a very beautiful man. That's kind of where I'm at with it. But I truly was in a different age. I would have been like one of these like 15-year-olds on Twitter being like, Zac Efron outsold Chase is a flop. That it really would have been.
You would have been involved in the Stan Wars.
I would have been on the front. So, yeah.
Okay, you know who was my actual boyfriend of any of this is not in this cinematic universe, but kind of extended. I'm including the OC in here. Is Seth Cohen. That's my boyfriend.
That's a boyfriend, yeah. That's a boyfriend.
Yeah.
I think what we like in these men is some contrast and some depth, even literally color contrast. Like when I'm thinking of Nate, I'm gonna go back to the cardboard box analogy because he is just one shade of like beige. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. From his skin to his toes, that man, he's a cardboard box. I really, and the other man's have this kind of dark. The other men have this dark quality. I don't know. I'm gonna
dark hair. They have dark hair. Is that
what it is? See, it's something. The hair. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. They're a little brooding. There's some intrigue to them.
Wow, I think I discovered brunette.
This is always way more of a Seth. See,
that's another cardboard box. Oh no,
Ryan's definitely cardboard.
He kind of looks like Nate.
Yeah.
And I can't believe we've gone this far without talking about it. Gossip Girl and the OC, same creators and showrunners.
Yes, and Bart or whatever. Yeah, Bart, same patriarchal character. Mm-hmm. There's that same actor in both of them.
And Lily is absolutely, like, there were so many just incredible older women on the OC, and Lily is like their daughter, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know, I was struck watching this. I was like, damn, I forgot that Lily is, like, really beautiful. She looks, like, great.
So gorgeous, especially in this episode.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'd never finished the OC. I don't know. There's something so... We get it, you know?
Yeah, I watched a little bit in early pandemic for the first time in years and years and years. And I have to say, it's good. But it does not hit like Gossip Girl.
No.
And there is nothing glamorous about the OC to me. Like, it just, if there's something about Gossip Girl that just scratches that itch so much better. Like, you're watching kids in the suburbs in the OC.
The thing about Gossip Girl is there's not one inch, not one ounce of grit on Gossip Girl.
Yeah, it's the anti-skins.
It has a smooth surface.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is the smoothest surface. But we do have to say one thing, though. And that is Misha Barton. We will never forget you. We will never forget you. You are an icon to this day. And, like, Blake Lively is kind of the most, like, evolved form of Misha Barton. But Misha Barton, we will never forget you.
They're the same. They're the same archetype.
Yeah.
One laptop ago, and this is not a joke, I had a folder. For, like, I guess it was like an old Tumblr, just like little Facebook jokes I made. It was a folder called Misha Barton Whereabouts. And because she truly did not do anything for like 15 years. So I was like trying to figure out like what she was up to. And like for the bulk of it, she was running like a used car garage and like renovating. Like she sold like jalopies and stuff.
What?
Whoa, where?
I think it was in LA.
Oh my God.
It might have been the OC though, too. Like, but it was like somewhere in like the Southern California region. And she was like doing this kind of, I don't know, like car, like Sydney Sweeney does the same thing too. But I think it's just like, you know, hot girls and cars, like stuff. So
that is so bad. That's funny to have a Misha Barton's whereabouts folder, but it's also funny to measure time in laptops.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was my college laptop, and it definitely was me just trying to be like fake gawker a little bit, tracking down this woman who like really was not like in great shape for a lot of that decade, and just seeing what she was up to. But I think she's okay now.
Wow, fake gawker. That's a way of life. I'm trying to think if I have any like niche celebrity obsessions that are like gawker core. I'll think on that one. I like that though.
I mean, to be fair, this show really enabled Gossip Girl specifically really enabled a lot of that, because this is a show about the surveillance state, but also about like niche, like preppy glam adjacent obsessions and how that like spirals into madness. And I think I was definitely living a little bit of that with Misha Barton whereabouts.
Dumois does not give credit to Gossip Girl. Nearly enough, if ever.
That's a great point.
Gossip Girl made you.
And I think this is also like so many things, like the democratization of culture has watered it down so much, because the OG Gossip Girl was getting tips from like the creme de la creme society people. And when you have people writing into Dumois being like, Joe Biden spotted in DC, likely place for him to be, then like it's not the same, it doesn't have the same oomph.
Likely place for him to be. A few more questions before we get into it. Mm-hmm. I need to know your favorite Gossip Girl outfit from the show, if you have one off the top of your head.
From the whole show.
Yeah. If you don't have one, we can revisit, but
oh man, I have so many. Damn. Well, okay, I have some thoughts on this for like later when we're gonna talk about like outfits on this episode, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah, I have some kind of thoughts in general for that, but man, I can tell you about the ones that I was wearing knockoffs of in middle school and high school. So there was the one I just mentioned, the linen orange and blue like dresses that Serena and Blair had. Those were made by this, so a lot of like Eleanor's designs were like real designs by this brand called Lorik, you know. Yeah,
we were talking about this last week.
Oh really? Okay Yeah, so Lorik, I was my best friend Neha was like discovered this, and like this was like the most exciting discovery she ever made, and we were obsessed with Lorik. So we were always like looking on the Lorik website, like those dresses. We like got knockoffs made of those, and then there were like, they had these linen shorts that I loved, and then there was like this dress that Blair Blair wears ice skating and she wears it with this like thing over tight. It's like this, I don't know, this kind of like meshy dress she wears with tights and ice skating with like a fur over it. And I got that dress made. Then there's this dress that Serena wears to brunch that's like white with all this embroidery down the front. I got that dress made. They did the fucking embroidery. It was,
oh my God,
stunning. And then were there any other ones? There were definitely a few others, but those are the ones that stick out to me off the top of my head.
That's you have a great memory. That that brunch dress we talked about a few episodes ago. It's like blue marine. Is that how you say that?
Yeah, blue marine.
Okay. That would be humiliating. But I love that dress. I think that was my outfit of the week that week. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Amazing. And how do you think the show holds up watching it in the year 2024?
That's a great question. Well, I think the show holds up. The first few seasons hold up pretty well. I don't really think there's been... Well, it's interesting because there's been a reboot of Gossip Girl, but even including that, there hasn't been a show that rivals it, I don't think, in terms of like that popular of a soap opera. Like, I keep thinking also, like, what is... I mean, there's kind of Euphoria, but it's just like doesn't... It's not quite the same. And I keep wondering, like, what is our fashion show? Like, what's our latest fashion show? I think Insecure is kind of maybe one of them, but it's that show's kind of closer to Girls than Gossip Girl in terms of like tone and stuff. Anyway, so I just don't, I haven't found my replacement, like in terms of fashion and drama for Gossip Girl. So I think it holds up pretty well is what I'm saying.
That's a great way to put it. It is a good show for fashion and drama. And I cannot think, I mean, I think people love talking about the White Lotus fashion, but that's just so in a different world, I think.
Yeah.
Integral to the show.
It wasn't necessarily good fashion. It was good styling to like show who the characters were, but it wasn't like fabulous fashion per se.
Yeah, because I think the point of White Lotus is that these rich, snobby people have money, but they don't necessarily have taste in many ways. So it's all these really high-end pieces haphazardly arrayed. But yeah, the girls of Gossip Girl are out the womb stylish. Like, they've never put on a bad outfit in their life, except for maybe a few this episode, but...
Oh my God. Yeah. There's something. Yes. I'm going to start thinking on that, though. What is a fashion, like, what's a modern fashion show? Cannot name one.
Well, every time they try to make one, I think they go a little too niche. Like, Euphoria is pretty close, but, like, Euphoria's fashion is, like, definitely more, like, grit than glamour.
It's so Gen Z outfitters.
Like, I think about some of these shows that come on to Netflix for, like, 2 minutes and then go away, like, did y'all, this might really have just reached like my little corner of gay Twitter, but did y'all remember that show Glamorous that was on Netflix last year?
Oh.
It was about like a fashion editor and it had Kim Cattrall in it and it was canceled.
Oh my God, I heard about that.
But like, I think that kind of show is, it's just, yeah. I mean, Gossip Girl was very like mass appeal in a way that like that wasn't. And I'm sure that was a great show. Like, people really liked it. But, like, it just, I don't know, just, like, it just couldn't break out.
I mean, there's also something to be said about the fact that nothing is mass appeal in the way that Gossip Girl was. No. You know? Like, nothing is mass appeal at all because everything's so segmented and streaming and blah, blah, blah.
I mean, there really is no monoculture. But you also look back, I like when I had the episode count up earlier when we were fact checking that, like the average viewership for a Gossip Girl episode was 2.6 million people. That's not a lot of people in hindsight. It just has been built out so much through like 15 years of retrospectives and it being constantly on streaming for people to see. And it just has such a devoted following that it kind of became monoculture that way. But also, if you were a certain age, it was monoculture. And I guess the same way Euphoria is. But
yeah, I'd like to see the numbers for Euphoria.
Euphoria is like, I think, 6 million or something an episode.
Yeah, the CW also, like, just thinking about that channel, like, it's it's teens watching the CW. There are no adults watching the CW. I mean, I don't know. At the time.
Definitely not, because this was on at the same time as, like, Supernatural, Smallville, oh god, like, all those kind of, like, superhero-y shows. I like Tail End of Charmed, I think, too. Like, I mean, it was all, like, the teen stuff.
2 million teens. Should we get into it?
Let's get into it.
All right. So last week, Jenny attended Blair's annual sleepover soiree and made a run for her crown. She broke Eric out of the asylum. She shoplifted at Eleanor Waldorf's, and she ultimately earned Blair's respect for now. Serena and Dan went on a fancy dinner date and turned it into a dive bar pool hang. And Lily and Rufus made a salad. And that's about all that happened. A sizzling salad, as Drew said last episode. Okay. Episode 6. Okay. Drew, spotted or me?
I'll do it. Spotted. It's the masquerade ball and everyone's going. Well, not everyone. A select few, like Jenny and Dan, will have to sneak in behind a mask. Plus, a special someone is back in Dan's life, and it is annoying as ever.
Oh my god. When I saw Vanessa, I screamed. I screamed a scream.
I know. She's like in his window. It was so funny.
I'm sorry. We'll get into that, but who should we talk about first, Drew? Should we talk about Dan first? Is that crazy?
No, let's talk about Dan first. I think we should talk about Dan first.
All right, I'm moving into the top. Yeah, I guess Dan had the most going on this episode.
This was a great episode for the Humphreys. Well, I mean, like, not great in terms of how we assess them, but, like, in terms of a Humphrey showcase episode, this was all about the Humphreys.
I gave Dan a C this episode. What did you guys grade him?
I gave him a D. I was not happy with Dan.
D for Dan.
D for Dan, exactly.
Yeah, I also gave him a D for Dan. He just doesn't have his shit together even a little bit. Like, his inability to just pick up the phone and set his calendar straight.
Mm-hmm. I mean, awful. I don't, also just the annoying, like, snide-toned kind of thing he's got going on was really burned up.
I wrote down one of his quotes because I just found him, I found him so insufferable. Just like, I mean, whatever. The lie was kind of whatever, but like when he got caught lying when Vanessa caught him lying, the way that he like, just, he says, what was I going to say? That I was attending a masked ball without a mask or an invitation to pursue a girl who had both? I was like, why are you making yourself the victim right now? You were lying and now you're like, and then he accuses her of stalking him. It's like, you are such a narcissist. This is insane. Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm like, of course you were Gossip Girl, you dick.
Yeah.
He's such a narcissist.
This is, we just have to come out and say it. Like, no one's listening to this who hasn't seen this show already. I mean, but
God, sorry.
No, because there was something this episode, like, that drove me crazy. And I know that they started writing season one of Gossip Girl not knowing that Dan was going to end up being Gossip Girl. But when he looked at the Gossip Girl blog page, which is so rinky dink in GeoCities, I love it, and saw that, like, this thing about, like girls have to, like, ask knights to come out with them for themselves or whatever that's what it actually was. But I was like, oh, like, we are to believe that you, in a fit of, like, delusional psychosis, type this yourself and are looking at it as if you had never seen it before.
Like, so shocked.
So crazy.
Proofreading.
I know that was one of those clear, like, plot hole moments where I was just like, come on.
Reading for typos.
Yes. there's no way they knew that Dan was going to be the reveal, but that this was just like, oh, this makes no sense. But
let's take it from the beginning. So Dan is waiting for, he's talking to Rufus and Jenny about the masquerade ball, and Serena hasn't invited him yet, and he's waiting on her call when ring ring, Vanessa phoning. He starts the call with, "What's up, how's your mom?" Which for some reason I was like, what?
I know.
And then, "What's up, how's your mom?" And then she asks if he has her copy of The Crying of Lot 49.
Oh my
of
God.
Of course they're like sharing pension notes. And then she says, "Oh, try over by the window," and she's sitting inside of his room.
Everyone on this show is obsessed with home invasion, and no one has like locks on their doors or windows. It's crazy.
I'm sorry, what is wrong with her? And what is wrong with him for not... One would think there would be some kind of startled...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just like, there's Vanessa.
Vanessa. I mean, I don't know. I guess that was a choice. You know, he didn't look surprised at all, but there she is inside of his house, crawled in through the window. You know what? Yeah, I don't know. So it's clear that Dan has mixed feelings about Vanessa being back. And, you know, we learned that they had something going on before she left, but now... And now he's in love with Serena. So what is he to do?
What is he to do? I think this is going to be the last... Like, we're going to have to start giving Vanessa her own grades every week. But, like, what an outrageous introduction. She dressed like Chelsea from That's So Raven.
Oh, my God. She's... Okay,
JoJo Siwa.
She looks like JoJo Siwa. She looks like Rihanna somehow. Like there's a mid-aughts Rihanna thing she's got going on.
It was even predated that, because like the red hair, like good. No, it wasn't good. It was the Only Girl in the World era video. Like that was 3 years after that. She might have jacked Vanessa's whole look.
Because Shut Up and Drive appeared 2 episodes ago.
No, but like, are we thinking of the same Rihanna era? I'm thinking of the one where she had like the red hair and she's like, she was always in like fingerless gloves and like booties with leopard print tights.
Okay, maybe I'm mixing up my Rihanna eras, but.
But if she was taking inspiration from Jessica Shore as Vanessa, that's galaxy brain.
Obviously she was. This is Vanessa introduction. I'm also reminded of what a bad actress she is. Or I don't know, maybe she just wasn't given good material. Just the delivery of, "I'm starving and I smell waffles." Like, okay.
I felt like they really, I don't know, they didn't do her justice sometimes. They like Manic Pixie Dream Girled her a lot.
Oh, for sure.
Also, a full year and a half before that term even got coined. Wow. Wait, oh no, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie.
That's a lie.
It happened after Elizabethtown. But, like, Safran and Schwartz, the creators of the show, are obsessed with this archetype. Like, I don't remember what her character's name was, but, like, Samira Armstrong's character on the OC, who, like, was, like, Seth's, like, obsession for a little bit, and then she... like gets on a plane and leaves forever, and she's like, "Confidence, Cohen." Like that is like the predecessor for.
Oh my God,
for this girl. And that's her. It's Samira Armstrong's in QAnon.
Oh my God! Wow. Wow, you know so many fun facts.
Like, I don't know how fun they are, but
yeah.
Fun facts, and also if you're just watching a show with him, and there's a character actor aside. Like a cameo, he'll know who it is. Like doesn't matter, because if I see an actor I don't recognize, I know Drew will recognize it.
The IMDb of it all really came into play today, and we'll get into it later, but there was a cameo that every time I watch this I forget, that was so shocking I screamed out loud in my house. Like
it's... I don't remember.
It's so crazy.
I feel like I know who it's going to be, but I'm not going to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Did text you.
You did, but I feel like it didn't register. Okay. Well,
we'll go.
Serena calls to invite Dan to the ball. But then she hears a female voice on the other end of the line. It's Vanessa talking about waffles again, I think. Serena's like, who's that? And he says, oh, it's my sister. But he's exposed for lying because Serena is at Blair's and Jenny is also at Blair's doing Blair's errands for the handmaiden ball, or no, for the masquerade ball. So Serena doesn't end up inviting Dan because he lied to her because he's a dirty liar and a narcissist.
He keeps lying on this episode. That's the second lie. He lies to both of them.
Cannot stop lying. Oh my god. I mean, I guess it's just this is a man who's never really received this kind of female attention, and now he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, totally.
Actually, I do is believable.
Yeah, absolutely believable.
What if you tell the truth?
I know, and I think all the women. I think Vanessa and Serena are both way too accommodating of it.
Absolutely.
So accommodating. Like, Vanessa and Dan, I mean, honestly, they might be the match made in heaven because these two are, like, full, like, we are the 99% walking around Brooklyn and bonding over, like, the Angelica and, like, pierogies at Veselka and all this other stuff. She could not stop talking about Brooklyn.
She could not stop naming, like, New York institutions.
I thought that was so funny.
Like, I wrote these down throughout the episode. Midnight screening at Angelica, pierogies at Veselka. My friend works at the costume department at BAM. Those are all direct quotes from this one episode. I'm sorry, we get it. We get it, girl. We understand.
I know. I wrote all of those down too, because it's like, that's so funny. They're making her be the stand-in for Brooklyn, which also gets weird with, like, the racial politics, because she's the one person of color in the whole cast. And, like, making her be the stand-in for just, like, all of Brooklyn. But then there's a very specific idea of Brooklyn, which is, like, not at all, like, it's still very wealthy, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's very weird how they handle her character.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, just the way they're talking about, oh, like, the trust fund kids, we should egg their limos. I don't know.
And they're right by a basketball court when they do this too. I mean,
like main streets of Brooklyn, sure.
Right. No, totally. God. Yeah, that was Vanessa. I don't know. She's complex. The way she's portrayed throughout the series is very complex. Like, I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like they like kind of make her the voice of, like, moral purity on the show, which I think is, like, an unfair expectation of her. And then at the same time, like, it's a show all about, like, people being fucked up and getting a million chances. And then, like, I forget exactly how her arc ends, but I know she, like, just suddenly starts doing all this fucked up shit and just gets written off the show eventually. So I feel like Chuck Bass does, like, really evil shit. And then she just kind of, like, starts acting out a character towards the end and gets written off. And I just felt like that was really unfair, the way she was, like, yeah, written off, or, like, while also being the voice of, like, the unheard in Brooklyn, unfair expectations of Vanessa.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like she was just not a very, like, well-rounded, well-written character. Like, I don't think they were exactly sure who she was at any point in the show.
Yeah. And to be fair, they do that for all the characters by the end. Like, everyone loses the plot severely by season, like, 5.
That's true.
But Vanessa starts, they never start great with her.
No, she's just kind of like a walking map of New York.
She's
like,
the mayor of Brooklyn.
She's the mayor of Brooklyn. She's a tourism ad.
She's a pamphlet.
Yeah. She's a walking pamphlet who shows up in your bedroom window and asks you where you put her pension book. I don't know about Vanessa. I All I know is every time she's on screen, I'm kind of grimacing.
Yeah. And she was like, she was so outrageous this episode the whole way through. I've said outrageous in regards to her character so many times already this episode. And I'm just telling you right now, this is episode one of 121 season. And I'm perfect. Not going to stop saying it. Like her running around and that Heather Gray tee over a sack dress, or a Heather Gray hoodie over a sack dress with a mask on, trying to catch like, or like, what was she trying to do there? Like she was trying to like get Jenny's back.
Trying to help Jenny.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into Jenny in a second, but she's, I think, kind of just going in a, you know, anthropological study kind of way, or maybe to be Jenny's backup, maybe a little of both. But she sneaks in. Dan also sneaks in and is rents a tux and is trying to do a grand gesture. This is also after making plans with Vanessa and then canceling on Vanessa. But he catches her dancing with another man. They get over it.
Serena.
What?
Catches Serena dancing.
Yes, thank you for clarifying. He catches Serena dancing with another man. And then a whole thing happens where Serena and Dan kiss. I don't know what leads to the kiss. I don't even remember.
He's like, I only like one girl and it's you.
Sure. Oh, right. They talk about the lie. Yeah. So she's like, you lied. And he said, yeah, but love you. And then kind of opens up about the whole Vanessa thing.
That's like exactly what it was.
And then Vanessa's there. Like she overhears it. And that's when they fight.
There's a crazy amount of overhearing going on.
I know. And not seeing someone standing right next to you.
But that's exactly right. I mean, like, what is wrong? It's hilarious. So they kiss, and then when they part lips, you see, Vanessa standing
there. Scorsese is shaking. The composition.
So I have to say, I feel for Vanessa. Like, I feel like, I mean, it's a little unclear if, like, she screwed him over when she... Also, hilarious to me that, like, I thought she was, like, somewhere far away, and then it's revealed she was in Vermont. It's, like, not that far.
Well, once again, like, if Connecticut is Mongolia on this show, like, Vermont is the Arctic Circle.
Right, right.
You're, like, in, like, True Detective Season 4 in the ice station. Like, yeah. You're not... No one's seeing you ever.
That was wild. But like, okay, so it's a little unclear to me, like, if she screwed him over, if he like, but I really felt for her. I just felt like he said he loved her, and then he's like, she comes back, and now he's like lying to her. And then she goes through so much effort at the end to be his friend. I thought that was like, after he, well, I'll bring this up, but whatever. I just feel like he was like one of those like nice guys who like, you know, to use a Taylor Swift line, so casually cruel in the name of being honest. And
thank you.
And anyway, but yeah, we can get more into that later. Well, but
yeah. I think this kind of ties back to maybe one of the larger points of the show, which is that one of the greatest sins anyone commit is leaving New York in any capacity. Like Serena and Blair are still recovering because of that original sin, and then clearly like moving to Vermont has like made Vanessa like the most evil person on earth today. So
and with the mom, her going to Hudson was another like evil thing.
Yeah. Like if you're not in New York, you might as well be dead.
That's so true.
Absolutely true. I mean, no, Brenda, I agree with you though. Like I saw that through Vanessa's eyes. It's like, okay, yeah, I moved away and now I'm back and I don't recognize you anymore. And I don't know. But she says, like, you said you loved me. And then he goes, loved you in the past.
God.
You see the kind of blurry image of Serena standing just out of focus, hearing the whole thing. So I just love how conveniently she overhears the entire explanation secondhand. So it's funny.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Okay. Should we move on to Serena just to close out this little
I'd do that. Yeah. Absolutely. to. I gave Serena, I'm kind of doubting my rating now, but I, or grade, I gave her a B. I guess I don't remember why.
Serena's a feeling. Like, I gave her a B too. I have no justification to back that up other than she gets a B this week.
It's a B this week. She's a B for me. B for Brenda, me. What did you grade her?
I gave her an A. I loved Serena this episode. I actually gave both her and Blair A's. I thought that they were on their best behavior. I thought Serena, I did not like her in that episode before. I thought she was being a real brat on that date where it's like, oh no, there's a man who wants to like take you to a nice dinner and like maybe slightly misinterpreted who you are a little bit, but it's also your first date. Like, fucking relax. Like, she was being such a brat. Anyway, that annoyed me. But this episode, I thought like, okay, she really cares about Dan. She's giving him chance after chance to explain himself, even after he runs after Vanessa, which is an insane thing to do. And then I thought, I think she's someone who kind of like, I find her generally irritating because she like lacks boundaries and like gets away with it. But, and just kind of is like, oh, did this crazy thing happen that happens to serve my interest? But in this episode, I felt that she had pretty clear boundaries with Nate, like when he came over. And she was like, you have to leave. I was like, okay, good. Like, I mean, not before like being his shoulder to cry on and touching his hand and stuff, but like, I was impressed by her given how few boundaries she usually has.
Perfect rationale. Like, she even has good boundaries at the top of the app when Dan is lying to her on the phone. Like, she doesn't engage with the lie. She hangs up. What she says, actually, I have to go. I don't have to talk to you about anything, which is a classic Serena maneuver. And that's perfect. Deflect, protect yourself, and take two, aim to get a date.
Truly. Yeah. She, the date. So after Serena thinks that Dan is lying to her, he is, she asks Blair to set her up on a date, and said date is, I don't know how like she got his virtual profile, but they're messaging on AIM. He's this like hot rich dude with a big jaw and blonde hair, and that's all I know about him.
Yeah, I took away two things from this. The first flirtatious missive from Serena to this guy was, how you doing?
Yeah,
like Wendy Williams. And for whatever reason, like on this guy's page, there was a section that says wants to meet. And the three people he wanted to meet were Britney Spears, Angelina Jolie, and Halle Berry.
Yep. The camera focuses on that.
Yeah.
It's like, this guy is gay, right?
Yeah.
Like,
Halle Berry. My
big boy. I also like paused at his like that screen to like see what info I could glean. He has a Hey Ya lyric as his lyric. This is random. And his username was Rich Boy the Fourth.
Good for him. Yes.
So clocked the how you doing thing. I was like, they don't like this is, I feel like the writers didn't get how people talk on the internet.
But maybe they did. We talk like that.
Maybe we did. We talk like that. How you doing?
How you doing?
I definitely was doing. How you doing? I was using like eights, like the number eight, and
totally
words and stuff. Like, definitely was doing
that. W Y D N M J C H B U, the classics.
Yeah, yeah.
But we already went through, I guess, everything else that happens. Confronts Dan about the lie, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I did like her and Blair on the bed, just like being friends. Like, Blair's like putting more for trust in her again. And that was sweet. They're doing work.
Yep. I mean, I think we have to move on to, oh, do we have anything else about Serena before we move on to B? Okay. Because Blair, I felt so sad for her.
Yeah, I'm shocked you gave her an A, Verinda, because she was a D for desperate for me.
Oh my god, a D for desperate. Oh, well, okay, tell me more. What do you mean?
I hate using this word, but It was a little thirsty this week. Setting up a scavenger hunt at a masquerade ball to lose your virginity to your boyfriend who hates you. I'm sorry. That is just, it's never going to be an A. It's never going to be an A.
It's a C for couldn't be me.
Oh my God.
Like at one point it could have been me, actually.
I think it could be me. I gotta be real. I could see myself. I belong to the school of women who, this is something I'm, you know, I'm trying to move beyond, but women who engage with men who hate them.
<You know? laughs> Been there. And like the grand gestures, like maybe this will change things. And you know what? It's going to push them further away.
Wearing a crown. The straight men don't like crowns. They don't care about crowns. Like, that's not like.
Yeah, she should hook up with Serena's date.
God, poor Blair. Okay, what I liked about Blair was that she was really trying with Serena. I feel like that was big of her. I was trying to remember. I couldn't remember the very beginning of it, but like, I honestly feel like if my best friend slept with my boyfriend, like I would not be their friend ever again. Like I just wouldn't. And so I think like she's really imperfect at it, but like her trying is like. I just always have empathy for her when I see her trying with Serena.
Yeah. She's also so codependent too. Like,
yeah.
With her, with Serena and with like the minions too. It's just,
yeah.
She needs to be surrounded by people who are validating her at all times.
Totally. Yeah, she does. She does. And Serena like gives her that. And it's like, even when she was like, I'll be your handmaiden, like whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
But let's just talk about the ladies in waiting. I'm sorry. You're right. What straight man is going to be charmed by this kind of scavenger hunt that leads to her deflowering?
Right. I mean, it's, I, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, the having to unwrap literal riddles. Nate, especially Nate, who's couldn't do a crossword if it hit him on the head. I don't know.
Exactly. It's like, all right, you have blue balls. Let's make it into a game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So he asks her minions to be the first two ladies in waiting, and they give a little rhyme, and I don't know. There's one point where at the party, he looks like he's on drugs or something. He's like spaced out, and they tell him, okay, just go to Serena for the next clue. And he goes, Serena.
God.
Bless his heart. We'll get into, I guess, why Nate was zombie mode later.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel sad for Blair because they didn't get their happily ever after because he didn't find her by midnight.
I feel like this episode really, I think of this episode as less, even though it was like an action, you know, there's a party, it was an act, there's lots of action scenes. I think of it more of as like a building episode. It's like kind of in between two bigger episodes. Like, you know, the high is coming off from like Jenny establishing herself as maybe the next queen bee. And then in the next episode, we like see the downfall of her relationship with Nate, but this one really like set the tone for what was going to happen with Nate. And I think it like really showed that they were not meant for each other and they weren't hearing each other and all of that. And like, I don't know. I just think like, yeah, like I think that like Blair is such a compelling person. She's so, I'm not saying this just because I'm a Virgo, but she's so Virgo coded. Like she's so like, she has like that's that the scavenger hunt is so interesting, but like Nate was not the person to do that for. Like he couldn't, like literally couldn't keep up with that, you know?
Yeah. You need someone like Chuck who is so for lack of a better word, aggressively, like perpetually horny that he will jump through the hoops that you set up.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah. Also just like cartoonishly so. There's something very I don't know. It's like, ooh, there's something very sexually embarrassing about this kind of scavenger hunt that I feel like Chuck enjoys.
Also, like, imagine being like one of the minions here too. And Blair comes to you and it's like, okay, you are going to be the clue bearer. I lose my virginity.
First, fuck. Yeah.
Yes.
You can't deal with it.
Sorry.
No, please.
I was going to say, it's interesting because now that you say that about Chuck, like in that episode, he literally was doing a scavenger hunt for Jenny. So it's like, it's just the pieces add up. And I also think, like, frankly, I just don't think Nate would be smart enough to solve the riddles. I think like Chuck, I hate Chuck. Like, I will never defend Chuck, but Chuck is smart. And I think he's like smarter, much smarter than Nate. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. That's a, yeah, totally. At one point, he even says something like, I don't remember what he says. He says like, oh, if it were me, I wouldn't have to use clues, or I don't know. For that little romance. But I didn't even give Chuck a segment. Or
I did write down, we can talk about Chuck when we talk about Jenny. I added a little bullet here. I think we should do Nate next, maybe.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
Okay. I gave Nate an F. I mean, just F for failure of the family. F for failing his family. No, but I don't know. They're all failures in the Archibald household, it seems.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on the F.
Same. Total F.
Across the board F. That is a mega failure.
I mean, so tensions are growing between his parents, whose names I won't learn. The dad needs to woo Eleanor Waldorf because he wants to, like, help with the IPO of her clothing brand or something. And I don't know. It all gets a little sketchy when Nate finds his cocaine in his bookshelf.
Yeah. Oh. This... Julia wrote down my quote of the episode here, but Chuck says, Nathaniel, I'm shocked. I thought you were strictly an herbal man.
Oh, yeah.
That is one of the lines that for some reason stuck in my head.
That one stuck with me too.
Something Chuck calling it yayo was so funny too to me.
Yeah.
I love that slang.
Something about the way Chuck or Ed Westwick moves his voice in this show in such a beguiling fashion.
To me, it always seemed like, I was always like, oh, he has a British accent, he's doing an American accent, and it's hard for him, that's why he talks so slowly.
I don't know what it is. I kind of, it works for me. Nathaniel, I'm shocked, like there's
yes,
juice there.
He's always like pursing his lips too.
Cursor. It's upsetting. But Nate is so freaked out about the cocaine. And I mean, before this, I think it was the last episode, maybe two episodes ago, Nate's trust fund was drained because his dad was quote unquote moving accounts around. So something sketchy is happening and Nate cannot focus on anything else. So he tries calling Blair, she doesn't answer, and her voicemail has changed to, I'm getting ready for the ball, which I found funny. But he shows up at Serena's unannounced to talk about the whole coke thing, and he's stressed, blah blah blah. But this stress leads to his inability to engage on Blair's scavenger hunt later.
Yeah, he's catatonic.
Oh my god.
Saint Serena was like on her premium advice mode bullshit this week. And I found it just completely unbelievable that like someone who is supposed to be like 15 or 16 in 2007 would say the following. Okay. Maybe it's old. Someone left it over from the 90s. The limelight. Tunnel. Our parents did way worse stuff than we do. I just was obsessed with someone who would have been 4 years old in 1996 talking about the limelight.
You know. Oh, she's an old soul, I guess.
She's a club kid. She was partying with RuPaul.
That's so funny. I really love that. Sometimes they write these characters and they forget who they're writing for, I fear.
I love it. I like, it's such a beautiful sentence, and I would never ever criticize the quotes on this show. The plotting, yes. The character motivation, yes. This show never stops being funny and silly.
This show would have been so great. Wait, was Twitter around? Twitter wasn't around, right? Like, such tweetable lines.
Twitter came, I think it was like season two or three, probably when Twitter launched. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Nate was really annoying me this episode. Like, he always annoys me because he's just mistake after mistake. But like, he, I feel like, again, like this episode was supposed to show how him and Blair are not right for each other. And I felt like it was supposed to be one of these things where like, they both equally mess up. Like, she's not there for him emotionally. He doesn't like do, you know, he doesn't do her scavenger hunt. But I was like, I feel like he's not trying enough to open himself up to her. I feel like he should have called her more than once, or like it's the night of her ball. I know it's just bad timing, but like, try the next day to talk to her about it or something. Like, he was just not communicating, and he was like trying to like fall for Serena more, I thought.
Yeah, as we see later when he tries to tell Serena that he's not over her, but accidentally tells Jenny because they're all masked and they're both blonde.
Yeah, in case it wasn't clear by now, this is one of the most sitcom-y episodes of the show. Like, there are so many accidental misunderstandings and people in the wrong room in the wrong dress, and it is perfect. Would not change a thing.
That's a really good way to put it. And people overhearing things, and yeah. Oh my god.
Can I ask a serious question?
Uh-huh.
Are people on the show fucking stupid because a masquerade ball, like, you still know who the people are under the mask. Like, they were all in these like Swarovski masks.
I know.
Like, they don't like, you know who everyone is. Like, Jenny hiding behind a fan. And like, you still know what her hairline looks like.
What is her? No.
She sounds like Jenny Humphrey. She's not talking through like a vocoder.
Yeah, it's not some Darth Vader trickery. I really, are these people fucking stupid?
Like, Blake Lively is 5'10 and Taylor Momsen is not. You would know that wasn't Serena. And also, Dan grabbing that woman's shoulder on the street, it wasn't Vanessa, but that was racially coded. But like,
I'm gonna say that's too much.
Yeah, that was insane. That was like, I felt something that stuck out to me was like, that was the closest they come to like acknowledging race, is like, he mistakes her for another Black woman or like racially ambiguous woman. And it was just like insane.
Yeah,
I really,
that are the implicit bias episode.
Yeah,
like
literally. And he was so aggressive about it too, the way he's like grabbing her. Like, imagine being that woman. Like, that would be fucking scary.
Yeah, like, you shouldn't be grabbing Vanessa like that.
Yeah
grabbing anyone. Yeah, I,
oh my goodness,
I thought in that moment, couldn't do that today.
I mean, you also couldn't be in, I think, a show today. You cannot write in a entire scene of a 14-year-old girl setting like a honeypot trap.
Yeah, probably not.
Chuck Bass and like locking him on a roof. Like, that's a little, okay. Like, when you say it out loud like that, that's a little crazy.
Let's get to Jenny. Before we do though, gotta put the cap on Nate. Dad tells the mom that the cocaine is Nate's. And they have this very tense little family meeting where Nate is upset, disappointed, etc.
I'll be honest, I wasn't really paying attention during this scene because they started playing the song Happy Ending by Mika at the end, which I find Mika's voice, for those people who don't remember, he wrote that song Grace Kelly, which was like the quirky girl anthem when we were all in seventh grade. Uh-huh. And his voice is so distracting to me. I was like, there's Mika. I couldn't pay attention to anything else.
It's certainly distracting. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much more to say about then and that.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
So Jenny.
Jenny.
A clear A. a triumphant episode for Jenny.
So she is Blair's handmaiden. She's running her errands. She's picking up dresses and blah, 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 hoping for an invite to the ball. But Blair tells her she's not invited because she's a freshman, which, okay, if that's the rule, that's the rule. I don't know why they're making Blair into a villain for, you know, I mean, I guess you shouldn't make her do your bidding for you, but.
I also felt like the way that Blair was like, your time will come. It was nice.
It was nice. Yeah, totally.
Like,
yeah, I agree.
She relaxed. I don't know. She has this like big sister moment with Vanessa, which I just cringe. But Vanessa convinces Jenny to sneak into the ball. This is when she tells her that she has a friend in the costume department at BAMS.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The other crucial component to this, because this is the Cinderella episode, Jenny is gifted a priceless diamond tennis bracelet by a kindly shopkeep. With the alone or for free, with the promise that she has to give it back by the end of the night.
Now, I just don't know why people keep falling for this trope. Like, just don't make the $1 million bracelet. Don't do it. That's too stressful.
Especially one that is so loosely fitted to your wrist and hand, because it will fall off or get tugged off. And lo and behold, it does.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with Cinderella here. But she plays a little prank on Chuck. Chuck, who's dressed as a devil with a scary devil mask.
It was so scary.
Really scary. But he approaches her and asks her to dance, not realizing who she is because of her big disguise. By that I mean like one fan. And she tells him to leave a trail of his clothes and traps him in his underwear on a rooftop, much like he did to her in the first episode. Callback.
I like that. I was happy to see that. That, like, yeah, the, you know, like Chuck's sexual assault in that first episode, and then like knowing that the actor also has been accused of that is like just makes Chuck's character feel so dark to me. And I don't know. Obviously it's not equivalent to what he did to her, but I was happy to see some kind of like whatever payback.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I gave her an A, and I'm gonna give Chuck an F, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a little confused on what to rate her because I really enjoyed that part of it, and seeing her trick him, and I thought it was like also kind of showed how she is like similar to Blair, or like I feel like that's being established right now in the plot that like she's maybe the next Blair or whatever. So I liked that. I was a little confused at the beginning of like why she was like still running around and doing Blair's whatever chores for her, because I thought like when she left the sleepover, that was like in the previous episode, that was a real turning point. I guess I find her just like in general slightly annoying, just like how badly she wants to be included. I'm like, come on, just like be a little, have a little bit of a sense of self. But I guess I get it at that age, like she's like what, 14? Everyone literally is like that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think I really liked her in this episode. In general, I find her mildly annoying, so I think I just give her a B just because I have general annoyance.
Fair.
That's a good default grade and rationale on this show, because everyone's in it. I gave Chuck a D, just, yeah, I mean, he was close to an F, but he was very funny this episode. Definitely giving some, like, friend of energy again, though, but fine.
Yeah, friend of energy for sure. Should we do Rufus and Lily?
Yes.
I gave them a joint C because I'm just, like, I don't think I'll ever get higher than a C for these people. I don't need to see them on my screen. They annoy me. You don't need to hear me go into this again. I think I've made that abundantly clear.
I think I can get behind you on that. The grade for today, I think Lily has moments of servitude. Well, wait, no, that's not what servitude means. Like, servaciousness. That's what I mean. This was a C for codependency for me this week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that your letter ratings tie to a word that starts with that letter.
They don't usually. I'm in a mood today. The real C I want to give for this plot line and is a C for cameo and a C for Harry D. English from America's Next Top.
Wait. Does she play the... Okay, I knew it. I had a feeling it was going to be Bart Bass's hot blonde.
Yeah, that's Carrie D. from Cycle 7 of America's Next Top Model, one of the best cycles. It was so funny on that show. She did a lot of psoriasis commercials in one episode of Gossip Girl, and that was it. But I always forget that she's on the show, and I always just like squeal with excitement because you never see those girls out in the wild. I'm sorry to say. So when you do see them, it's a big deal.
Huge. She doesn't say a word, or maybe one word, but she. So Rufus and Lily attend a belly dancer hookah party at the Waldorf's. And Lily is upset to see Bart Bass with the aforementioned America's Next Top Model because they have an established thing or some sort of sexual tension relationship, secret relationship that was established a few episodes ago. Rufus and Lily eventually share a kiss, and Rufus said he wanted Bart to see how it feels to lose her. So, can you tell I'm impressed?
That's, you know, it was sexual intrigue, but boring.
Mm-hmm. But Lily looked really pretty, as we mentioned before.
Yeah, Lily looked really pretty. I found them so unremarkable. I like forgot to even grade them. I forgot they counted as main characters.
Mark, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would agree with C. They're just like, I don't know. It's funny because their relationship rebuild is like going so slowly compared to how fast paced the show is. I'm like, can you just like say you love each other or something already? Like, what's going to happen? I don't know.
What it is, it's the pace that's really, I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't care about your wife who lives upstate. I don't.
I do like Lily's like continuing ability to dom him within an inch of his life, though. Like sharing a kiss and then saying you feel nauseous about it is
queen behavior. Yeah.
Is that it for this week? For all the grading?
I think we're good. I think we should move on to our final segment.
I do want to say this is my favorite episode of the show so far.
Yeah.
That's my overall thought.
I think the brunch episode might be my favorite, but this is a close second, perhaps.
Wait, they haven't done the iconic... Maybe that's not even this season. The iconic Thanksgiving one with
Not yet.
That's not that. You know.
I love that episode.
I think that one is later in the show, but there is a Thanksgiving episode in a few episodes.
No, it's Blair Waldorf Must Pie, and mm-hmm. I think it is the Whatchasay episode. And that's
really.
Yeah.
Oh my god! Wow, this show is an embarrassment of riches. Like every episode this season is a banger.
It's. I know. I don't want it to go downhill. I was going to say it's only downhill after that, but season 2 is amazing. Okay, so
season 3 is pretty good too, actually.
Then we get a little shaky. Yeah. But okay, needle drop of the week. I actually don't have one because what was like the budget cut this week? Not a lot of bangers or cinematic needle drops.
Yeah. I do like the song Kiss Kiss by Yeah Yeah Yeahs that was playing.
Oh, wow.
But I had to, in that, like, I recognize the Mika song, even though I think it is devoid of artistic value, but I don't really, you know.
Yeah.
Not the strongest week.
I felt the same. I was like, damn, like, there was a bunch of songs. There wasn't that much music, and there's suddenly, like, song, song, song when they're at the party. I made one note because I minored in film in college, and the one thing that sticks with me is this term diegetic sound of, like, when it's the back goes, you know, it's the background noise or whatever. So it's like, oh, it's cool that the song Kiss Kiss goes from being like soundtrack, whatever, a soundtrack song to being like diegetic sound when they go into the party and it happens to be playing there. That was like 1 second. And I was like, let me use one term I learned in college.
I mean, they have a lot of, the music of the show, the sonic direction of the show, I think is really good. Usually.
Agree. Totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I actually, do you have a needle drop of the week, or are we on the,
should we do outfit of the week?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, I have two I wanted to shout out. One was Blair had like a bump it kind of hair thing going on at one point. And I found that delightfully nostalgic. And then Vanessa's like the mid-aughts Rihanna look I mentioned earlier. She's wearing these big gold bamboo hoops and this neon yellow top. And a black, like, moto-ish jacket. Calling it out because it was just so of its time, not because I like it. But, I celebrate women.
Yeah. My outfit of the week was far and away Eleanor's caftan that she wore to the party. She looked so good, like white with kind of like black stone beading and gold accent jewelry, like very chic. And I like Eleanor. This show never gives us like quite enough Eleanor, but I really like Eleanor.
I love Eleanor. Yeah, she's definitely, I think she's probably the most interesting parent. I had a couple of thoughts about outfits of the week. I was really excited because it's like there's a party, there's a ball, it's gonna, you know, they're gonna deliver. They really deliver with the gowns usually. Like I think about the Hamptons white party. That's one of my all-time favorite Serena looks, is that white dress. Or like Blair in, you know, when she meets Chuck in Paris, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I was like excited for this, but then I was like, yeah, pretty disappointed, I would say. I thought that the outfits or like the styling was interesting in that like I thought Blair was like pretty subdued, but I was like, maybe that's kind of what they're trying to show about her this episode. Like she's really like kind of about to get her heart broken. She's like trying to have this be her big night. And it's just like, that's not going to pan out. And she's kind of dressed to indicate that. And then like I think the most interesting stylistic thing, and I think where all their attention was going in the episode was like the fact that Serena and Jenny had this sartorial switch up. And so they were like dressed very similarly. And this has been this ongoing theme I noticed for like the episode before. And I think it's mentioned in the following episode, like they just look so similar, like these two beautiful blondes. And I thought that was interesting. And I thought like also from Blair's perspective, like Jenny is like someone she's scared will take her place. And like Serena, someone who took her place like with Nate. And like, anyway, and like, then it's kind of like this weird Freudian thing with like Dan, where he's like mixing up his sister and his girlfriend. Anyway, so I thought all those parallels in the styling was an interesting thing this episode.
That is a great point. In the last episode, I think it was when the woman at the Ostroff Center described Jenny as a beautiful, young, beautiful blonde girl, and you know, Lily thought she was talking about Serena. Anyway, I think that's a great call out.
Best line read?
Yes. Okay, mine easily. Another strange Serena read. The Waldorf women never met a theme. They didn't just love. And then just a very quick cut giggle after. I don't know, just her... It's almost like when she reads these lines, she knows how strange it sounds coming out of her mouth. Anyway, that's mine.
Yeah. Mine was actually from the same scene, from Lily. And keeping in theme with how much I love the silly little party ideas that they have on the show. Is this giving a night in Tangiers? As if that's like, what could that possibly give?
A little, so true.
Yeah, that was so random. I was like, why? It was also so of the time, like, they wouldn't say that now. Like, I feel like they'd be a little more, like, culturally sensitive or whatever.
It's like, because the city is not called Tangiers. It's right. Tanger. With that's, no S.
That's so, that too.
That's, yeah, that's crazy. And what was it? Was the party Morocco themed or something?
Yeah, it was called A Night in Tangier.
Oh, that was the theme of the, oh, I see. Okay, sorry, I misunderstood. Okay.
What is with these women? That's all.
I pulled two quotes that stuck with me. One, I think we actually already mentioned was, oh yeah, yeah. I think Julia, you mentioned it. Was you said you loved me, and then loved in a 16-year-old pre-shaving kind of way. God, I was like, that's so fucked up. So fucked up. And then the other one, and I was just like, ugh, again, like I think I said this earlier, but just like so casually cruel in the name of being honest. Like, why are you saying that? Why did you have to say in the pre-shaving kind of way? Why are you making me feel like you only liked me because you were not a man? Me, why am I? I'm like, I identify with Vanessa. I'm like, me, I was personally hurt by Dan Humphrey.
You really were. Wow. Honestly, though, why play it so much? You didn't have to say that.
I know. And then the other one I pulled was just when they're talking about the ring. I thought that was like so interesting. The like Nate's mom being like, enough business talk, you're boring her. And then she's like, Eleanor, I was thinking when Nate and Blair get engaged, Blair should have my grandmother's ring. I was like, ooh, the way that like women do these like, you know, these deals, like very like, I don't know, just interesting socially.
Yeah. I mean, also, I wish I caught that moment too, but more because of Eleanor's response, because I think she was very unimpressed by the ring. I don't remember what she said, but she's like, oh.
She was like, it's from Cornelius Vanderbilt, you say?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. That was it. So funny. Yeah, honestly, great episode. Do we want to... I don't have anything for the final two segments.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Bully of the Week and Victim of the Week were Nate's dad bullying Nate by implicating him in a drug sting. That's kind of as... that's as bad as it gets.
Don't want that to happen with your dad, really.
No. And then my XOXO was Filter World by Kyle Chayka, which is a great book I read for my book club this week. We talk on the show so much about, I think, the algorithm and how like there's no cultural curation anymore. And this is just a book length exploration of that by someone who is much more intelligent than I am. And I finally finished it and it was good.
I really want to read that.
Anything yeah, that's else? That's also what I had down for like my whatever rec or like what I wanted. Well, this is more like just it was just something I started thinking of. It's not yeah, it was more just like I just remembered like what Web 2.0 was, and I like forgot that there was like a time when the internet was a place rather than like on your phone and ubiquitous, but the way they like engage with the internet is like on their laptops in their rooms kind of specifically. I thought that was interesting. And there was a good there's a good Atlantic essay about this, about like I thought this essay did a good, I'm forgetting the headline of it, but it did a good job of kind of being like there's this tension between the lies that everyone tells and like the truth that like gossip and the internet kind of, and Gossip Girl specifically, like unearth. And that's like the central tension of the show. And I thought that it, yeah, this piece did a great job of showing how the internet is very integral to like, kind of, I mean, in its patchy way, like truth telling in this like high society or whatever.
Yes, I'm going to this article.
Please.
Yeah, I think I pulled it up. It's called, if this is the one you're talking about, it's Truth, Lies, and the Internet by Rebecca J. Rosen.
That sounds right. I can confirm after, but I'm pretty sure that's it. It's in The Atlantic from like 2017 or something.
Perfect. Great app, everyone.
Yep, all around. Thank you so much, Brenda. This was a total blast.
Yeah, I had a great time. Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you on social media if you'd like to be found?
Oh, yes, I would love to be found. My Instagram is confident underscore leader. And my Twitter is just my first and last name, VRINDAJAGOTA. And
Amazing.
that's the only socials.
Yay.
Yay.
Sorry. We'll just link out to our socials this week. I don't want to say anything.
I think
Sorry.
we're all really winding down.
I haven't eaten yet. I'm like, I need to open, crack open a tin of sardines and just get to work.
Get to work. Oh, thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah.
Back next week.
XOXO.
Girls' room.
Bye.